Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial podcast for All Mankind on Apple TV+. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 4, Episode 7, titled Crossing the Line. A lot of lines crossed here. Figurative, physical, literal, all of the above. Aaron, what did you think of this episode?
I think that this season's success is going to live and die based on this asteroid heist. That it feels like this whole season has been clearing its throat and doing a tap dance and trying to get to this moment. There's things about this episode I like. Unfortunately, I find it just wholly unconvincing, everything they're doing with Ed. And every single time they cut the old man Ed there in the middle of the striking Helos workers, I think this is stupid. This is not how this would really go. I am kind of shocked at what seems like just some of the laziest, most thoughtful like writing in some of the sequences. For example, how did the people that got blown up in the argon fueling incident get back to medical treatment and safety?
Mm-hmm. Palmer single-handedly drug them back through that tunnel.
I honestly don't think the writers even considered it. They certainly didn't give me anything to indicate that there was a way that that could have happened. I feel like they forget that they're not writing for Star Trek and there aren't actually teleporters. just some weird like self-inflicted wounds in the telling of this strike story, where it seems like they're taking a lot of shortcuts. They're like hammering characters that don't really fit the narrative thing that they're trying into the shape that they need to. And I think that I'm postponing judgment, because I think that this asteroid heist has to be wildly entertaining and very thematically satisfying and set, you know, a potential season 5 up just beautifully. But I'm losing confidence in that they, for whatever reason, like this season, it just feels like they don't got it. So. I'm not ready to hit the panic button. There's still some fuel, still some thruster fuel in the tank. We can try some more maneuvers, but I'm starting to think that, oh God, everyone's going to die.
Surface is coming up awful fast.
We're going to skip off the atmosphere and be lost to space. What are you thinking?
I thought this was pretty much a return to form for
well, okay.
I find it just believable enough that, you know, explosion happens and they send their other guys down through the tunnel to grab the injured people and pull them out. And they just didn't tell that part of the story because it's not the interesting part that they're wanting to tell. A lot of my suspension of disbelief is doing some heavy lifting here. And I'm kind of paving over some rough road for them in my mind, but I think... But I'm willing, and yeah, maybe I'm just doing the same, reserving my judgment, because I think this asteroid heist is going to be awesome. But the end of this episode got me super excited again, and
it's designed to
100%. You don't drop X going to give it to you without it being super exciting. And it felt like they were saving that moment up. So do I have problems with Ed? I mean, Ed has become a petty and kind of shitty character at this point. All of his motivations are totally impure. He just wants to stick it to Danielle. He doesn't want to go home and be with his family. He doesn't know how to be a grandfather. None of the stuff that he's doing personally is satisfying to me, but it's not... I don't necessarily view it as bad characterization. I mean, he... I don't want to say he comes to mind honestly, because he's kind of always been weird, but like I understand why he's doing the things he's doing, even if I don't like them.
Okay. Maybe you can help me then. Because what I think the show is wanting me to believe is that Ed's doing this for selfish reasons and, you know, for for the wrong reasons, and he doesn't give a shit about these Helios employees.
100%, yeah.
But everything they've... he's not dropping the act. Like, he, with rare exception, acts like he is completely on the worker side. And it's like, if this is that kind of, like, self-serving... and, you know, like skin deep kind of commitment to the workers' cause, I would expect that to look a little different.
Really? Huh.
Yeah.
I see a guy who's trying to keep up appearances, and Danielle challenges him in that meeting early on in this episode personally. And, you know, he acknowledges, yeah, this is a hard one for me to back myself out of that corner, but don't try and make this about me. This is about the workers.
Yeah, and it's just like, I don't like that this plot line has put, you know, Saint Danielle of the Eternally Correct Opinions in, like, her halo has got a little bit of a tarnish, because she's just being a stooge for the government. Like I said, there's a lot that I liked about this episode. It's just like, I felt like it was, it was bending some of the characters I love in unnatural directions, and I just do not believe Palmer could have fucking drugged any of those people. Like, they did a shitty job of setting that scenario up for me to believe. Like, they did a way too job of convincing me that the workers just had a fait accompli. Like, they got all the suits out there, all the entrances were blocked. Like, even if the miners wanted to be like, oh, shit, a disaster's happened, here's all the suits, I'm sorry. I don't believe, like, with the amount of injuries those people sustained, that, like, yeah, I just don't buy it. I don't buy you can get that many people through the tubes. And okay. if it was, like, an all-hands-on-deck miners, like, okay, well, we didn't want this to happen, let's get the suits back. And, like, they could have told that story, and they didn't.
Yeah.
So, like, and I think that's, you're supposed to believe that they just pulled everyone through those tubes, and that's ridiculous.
That's kind of the story of the season, right? Is they could have told that story and they just didn't. And I think if we're going to look back on this, you know, and we're going to be super impressed by the asteroid heist and everything's going to be great by the end of the season, that will still be the sticking point.
Yeah, they could have done better. And it's a slight, like, this is something that we noticed last season, and it's like the faulty asteroid pins with the faulty cables, like, there's starting to be some shimmying and shaking now. The perturbations of our orbits are really increasing, and it's starting to do structural damage to my suspension of disbelief, and they got to get that shit nailed down. Like,
it does pile up, you know.
Yeah.
Once you break people and then they start to realize what you're doing and the shortcuts you're taking, they become more obvious every time, and they become more annoying every time.
And I do like what they're doing. I think some of the stuff they're doing with this strike is pretty smart. I like that the powers that be are instantly jumping to label this as terrorism when, no, it's
it has
not.
Nothing
it's greed.
To do with
it has nothing to do with terrorism. Like, this is a self-inflicted gunshot wound that the astronauts and cosmonauts did to themselves because, for whatever reason, they're more interested in carrying the water of... Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, that they're doing a really good job of that to storytelling, but
I know why, for sure.
Yeah, it's just that they're not backing it up with the careful details, the careful attention to detail that I always thought was a hallmark of the show.
Mm. All right, well, maybe we should get into the actual recap here.
Yeah, you're listening to Hi Bob. We'll be right back.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald maneuvers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations, while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hi, Bob. Welcome back to More for All Mankind.
We start off with day 7 of the workers' strike. Ed and his workers negotiate with Danielle and her people. Danielle has made what she thinks is a fair offer, but it's been turned down. And she is getting frustrated and asks Ed how far he's willing to take this. And he asks, how much are you willing to lose?
The one time he let the mask slip was when he's like, you got to get off your goddamn throne and give us what's fair. And the mask slipped enough that I felt like, and it's something that Sam noticed, but I feel like they never fed that back and like had a like leadership, like no one challenges Ed on like, we don't buy your commitment to our cause. We don't think that you're negotiating with good faith. We need you. I felt like he cut Sam, who was the leader of the labor movement, off at the knees in that meeting. And there was no other, you know, there was no deliberations on the labor side.
I think that would be a problem if he were pushing for something that Sam didn't agree with. But they're 100% aligned on their actual mission here. Yeah, Ed's not doing it for the right reasons. He's not doing it for pure reasons, but he's 100% pushing for her goal.
I felt like they needed another minute before Dev showed up because there was a fracture. Sam was the one being like, hey, we got to call this off. There was nothing, you know, we didn't intend for this to happen. And Ed's like, no, we got to stay strong. That would be, I think, for a better show. And I think this is a 43-minute episode of time. They had the time.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, there was definitely time to tell that story. I needed to see that fracture in the late, like, they're telling a story of, like, you know, Clay trying to stick the iron here, right? Ed's not of the people. He has not got the same motivations. He's got impure motives and dirty hands. Mm-hmm. But honestly, if I take a step back, you look at the way the show is framing it, and from the show's internal perspective, I think it believes that the striking workers are bad and that everyone at NASA and Roscosmos are technically the good guys. And if you pay attention to like how the musical cues go, when the workers do something, they play the ominous, this is a crisis, the astronauts have to deal with music. When the astronauts, cosmonauts circumvent the workers, there's the For All Mankind triumph music starts playing. And it's just like, it's really weird for the show to kind of put its thumb on this, what I think is the wrong side of the scale here. And it's like really fucking with my, you know, when I see like, and I would just like one person like Will or one of the scientists when they're talking to like someone suggests, what if we just pay these people? Earth's got $20 trillion payday. What if we all just made him a millionaire and got back to work? Which is kind of what Dev does, but he does it in this like shitty, heavy-handed man. It annoyed me throughout the whole episode that it felt like they were constantly framing it as workers bad, NASA, cosmonauts good, heroic, even though they're showing from, and maybe they're trying to, I don't know. That was a frustration for me. And I felt like from this scene forward, they I didn't feel like there was an honest conversation on the worker side about what to do with Ed, or even like a strategy session. And all the stuff I got from the NASA, Roscosmos, you know, U.S. government, Moscow side was a bunch of self-serving bullshit. And no one ever said, hey, maybe we should just pay these people. Like Will would have been a great person before he suggests, you know, deputizing a goon squad, be like, you know, we could just pay these people. I'd like just throw that out there. But even Will, our gay astronaut that we love so much last season is just going like, you know what, we should just get the boot up there and put it on their necks. Like, goddamn.
Well, Will might not be the right person because he's not Helios. I mean, there's no one who can pay them except for Helios. So, I mean, maybe they could, you know, make
is
them unofficial government
true?
Employees. And
yeah, I was going
to
say.
I mean, sure, the government can give money to anyone they want, I suppose. But
yeah,
like,
yeah, some kind
is
of
that special,
their,
is that their
special
place?
Tax, some kind of special tax credit for Martians, you know, that.
Well, I look at this not as, I don't know, they did their thing with like labor versus management or executives, the C-suite people.
Yeah.
Labor versus capital, I guess. I'm trying to look at what they're doing now because they're pushing this into another direction. They're pushing this to somewhere we can get for a bigger thing in season five, I think, which seems to be the For All Mankind of it all, right? Like the, are we going to get stuck? Like, are the workers going to have a small win here and get more money and we get stuck in the same patterns of, you know, private versus public interest up on Mars? Or are we going to push towards something better? And I feel like they're trying to push it in a direction that's like something better. So maybe that's what they're at. Like the workers here are essentially rooting for the status quo in a lot of ways, which is, you know, that divide between labor and capital. And then Dev and Ed are now going to be working towards something better, you know? And I don't know how that shakes out because I don't know what the better is, right? If I did, I'd be pushing for it here in our real world. And I agree that like when you try and relate it to the things going on in our society today, it does feel a little bit like they're on the wrong side on this show. But the goals are misaligned because like the workers want more money for themselves, but Danielle's trying to get this asteroid for everyone. So like the show kind of has it in a place where you do want to root for Danielle over these workers. If you can, but it's tricky too because all of this is framed in the profit motive, and that's the sticky part, right? Like Danielle wants to do something good, but that actually means a huge win for Helios. So,
yeah,
it's
there will
it's
people
real
get,
tricky
be getting
to,
rich
to make
off
that
this.
Transition.
Yeah, and it's like I don't, it's weird, like because so if I accept that framing, if I understand what you're saying, and I might not. But like, if I accept that framing, then it's like seems to be the show's opinion that for us to benefit For All Mankind, the little people just need to make all the sacrifices, and the big people will get the profit take and profit share, and until I guess
until
we
what?
Just get to a better future. Yeah, we just let the big people have their money and have their wins, and us little people do all the work.
So you have some altruistic leader take over and create a better system after we've sacrificed. Yeah,
if you believe this is capable, the hard part, right? You know, and so when I see so cynical, like it's like is Dev the hero here because he's just cynically using this Harambe shit that you know they were talking about, you know, cynically exploiting that against the workers. Like, I thought for a brief second when he was kind of stonewalling Danny, I'm like, holy shit, I was accidentally right last week. The Dev's going to come here and he's going to be like, you know what? Fuck Earth. I'm a Martian. I'm going to do what's right by Mars. And I think, broadly speaking, that he is doing that. But I have a hard time getting on board with any movement that starts with fucking the workers and dividing them and then being like, but I'm the strong man that's going to do right by Mars. And get, like,
he's using textbook union busting tactics. Textbook.
And it's funny because, like, I'm watching The Gilded Age. It's my fun guilty pleasure show. And it's all about, like, you know, like the Carrie Coon's husband, the kind of, you know, Lord Grantham protagonist of this series, came this close to being a hissable villain. Like, he had his workers had unionized and they had shut down his factory, and he was bringing U.S. military troops to escort scabs, and they were forming firing lines to kill all the workers to get into. And he finally, at the last minute, called it off. Because I'm like, I was looking, I'm like, man, is he gonna? I feel like Dev is like. So they avoided their protagonist of, like, just being a completely hissable villain. I feel like Dev kind of did the 21st century version of that, where he just rolled in there with a whole bunch of, like, buying contracts out for pennies on the dollar, you know, broke the back of the labor movement on Mars. And so, yeah. Like, maybe all the Martians can be robber barons, but, like, they certainly are no closer to, like, the for all mankind concept. As I said, I
don't know. I mean, I can squint and see it in the future, but I have to squint pretty hard. And Dev is such an enigma at times that, like, he goes and does something, you know, that I find reprehensible, which is bust up that union. And then he goes and says, hey, we're going to steal this asteroid from Mars. And I don't know what for Mars means.
And his fellow conspirator is also a terrible moral human being as well. So it's like, do I trust a show that they're going to tell this? Like, that's what I'm saying. It's like, do I trust a show? And I used to implicitly trust it. But, like, after this year, it's like, I guess I don't.
I just have questions about the timeline in this episode. We start 7 days later from the start of the strike. And suddenly Dev and Kelly and Alex are all up on Mars. How is that possible?
They were in transit. So, like,
we have a 10-week timeline from the start, from the moment they notice that the asteroid is headed their way.
Yeah.
10 weeks. As I understood it, it took 2 months to get to Mars, even on their accelerated engines.
It's just at a month at the optimum time, and I don't know if this is the optimum time or not, but, like, according to the preseason release material, they've knocked that down to a month under optimum conditions. But no, you might be right. Like, yeah, if, like, but I think time elapsed in the last episode too, and that's the thing that we're not. But again, I think the show could do a better job of holding her hand through that with, like, you know, maybe they need title cards that say X amount of weeks later if they're doing the timing and all that kind of stuff. Honestly, anything that can help this audience suspend their disbelief at this point, I would appreciate, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, and it's not, it's, I'm not asking for much.
Don't do that.
Right. But I don't necessarily think it's a good pattern that I've been seeing.
Yeah. I mean, the storytelling is really firing on all cylinders. It can work, but I agree. I need...
It just, there's a lot of attention to detail. I'm going to point it out as I go through, but just stuff that, like, you know, I don't think they're even trying on some things, even things that the show used to pride itself, like scientific accuracy and, you know, how it actually is out in space.
All right. Eli talks with Arena about the strike difficulties. They're both feeling the heat from their bosses. The strikers are demanding for Goldilocks to end up in Mars orbit. they decide to order the astronauts to restart the fuel generators themselves, even though they're not trained on the equipment. This will be the cause. This will be the true cause. It's not terrorism. It's astronauts working on equipment when they're not trained and thinking that they can just hack shit together.
Yeah.
This is like going to Ilya and saying, hey, can you make this thing work?
Yeah.
Well, sure, just give me a piece of the North Korean's fridge and it'll be good.
It's a perversion of the Apollo 13 ethos for purely profit. Like, you do a bunch of wild shit and improvise when you're trying to save lives and otherwise you're going to die. You shouldn't be doing this just to make a buck. And that's what's happening here.
Yeah.
Like, they are putting themselves in harm's way, not because it's the only way to get through, but because it's the only way to make the money that they can see by keeping all the money. And that's disappointing for, like, and like the fact that, like, none of the astronauts balked at it.
Well, because this is a thing. This is a tricky thing to do here, a story to tell, because they're trying to tell a story of something that is inherently good for humanity, mm-hmm. but is also being chased by the higher ups for profit and by the powers involved for profit. And the people on the ground, in some cases, have competing interests and they have high minded ideals and think this is amazing, but they also want to get paid. And like that, I think they're doing a good job of showing how sticky the wicket is of like private versus public good.
Yeah, except for because the crux is like that it is for the good of all mankind.
Mm-hmm.
But not all mankind is going to profit off of it. A very small fraction of mankind is going to profit. And yeah, none of the people who are going to profit, well, not even the seven nations. It's going to be a select people, select companies within those nations that are going to benefit from it, right? Helios, is going to have a $1 trillion windfall. And then the people who are actually doing the work are not the same ones that are taking that profit. So it's just like the people that are taking on a profit are using that like for all mankind as a cudgel. But like Dev ain't taking a fucking pay cut. He ain't donating his company to the world, right? He's not going to like give shares of Helios to every citizen in the world.
Yeah, I think he might have. He might just have inadvertently done it. We'll see at the end of this episode. But
oh, really? Yeah.
I don't know.
Like I said, I could be. Like crazy. I said, this whole season is going to hinge on what they do with this asteroid heist, because I will forgive a lot if that is a very cool plot that says something interesting about the state of the world and interplanetary travel and politics and all that kind of stuff. It's just that, you know, I as I say that, I feel like it lacks conviction, because every point that I've expected some careful attention to detail based storytelling, they've kind of not delivered this season.
Yeah, I'm feeling like this season has been slowly watching someone sink into quicksand. Just like them laying out all of the complicated relationships within our economy and government and labor pool. And then like Dev kind of being at the edge of the sand pit, holding out a stick. And I'm not quite sure if he's taunting me or genuinely trying to reach me with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's something compelling about it to me, but also I agree. It has not been like perfectly told, but I feel like it's such a complex thing to do. But
it's hard. No, like, it's hard, but like also that's not a license to do it shitty.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Like if you can't tell the story well, then tell a different story, you know?
Mm-hmm. I don't know the trajectory of this. It's like an asteroid that's been thrown into out of orbit. The trajectory is determined. They've got to get from here to Star Trek future utopia. Yeah. Somewhere along the way, they have to tell this story. So,
and it could be they're telling a tragedy. That's the other thing we can't dismiss. They could, like, you know, we talked about an asteroid smacking the Earth. Like, what if, and it's not out of like a technical problem, just out of hubris and greed that, you know, the Earth gets hit by a 1 kilometer asteroid. Like that would just be, but then, you know, that's like we're talking about the Expanse. We're going into the Expanse future and not the Star Trek future. And
or we're just talking about our current day. Hubris and greed are destroying the planet. Yeah, that's how it goes.
Yeah.
All right, let's go over to Sam trying to maintain solidarity amongst her budding union with Ed's help. Someone reports that they're going to start the generators, and Ed riles up the crowd.
Yeah, this is definitely a challenge of the labor union. The fact that we talked about this last week, that a lot of times the people striking are personally going to never recoup the costs. You know, like there's a lot of Hollywood writers and actors who are going to never make up the lost income that they gave up in the last 6 months. Mm-hmm. They're over the course of their creative lives, but they're doing it so that the people coming into the industry, you know, so the industry can stay healthy. They're taking a big personal hit. So for all writer kind, for all actor kind can, you know, for all teamster kind can still prosper. And they're showing that like how hard it is to maintain that solidarity, because it's almost everyone's immediate economic benefit to just go back to work. That's a shit situation, yeah. But at least we're getting paid, our families were eating, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought this felt authentic. I just hate that Ed is the kind of backbone of the movement. Like I'm not sure exactly where they're going with that, because like I can't think of anything from like recent history that they're trying to ape to. It's like, oh, you know, like some kind of corrupt core of a workers movement, you know, kind of it's mm-hmm. weird, you know. Because Ed's management. You usually don't see management uh-huh. crossing over into the worker side and saying this is horseshit.
Yeah, because management's usually kept fed and fat and happy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the tension. They're, so
yeah.
It's a weird ahistorical thing they're pulling here.
Yeah.
And I could buy it that Ed's that petty, but like why are mm-hmm. they doing it? What is the benefit of having Admiral Baldwin on the picket line for corrupt reasons?
And so he can then lose and then team up with Dev, who gives him another opportunity to be petty.
who is also doing things for the right corrupt reasons, right? You know, it's like, that's...
It's still debatable. I really do think it's still debatable. I don't trust Dev, but I also don't necessarily want to rule him out.
I mean, the Dev's kind of guy who could cry over how much a mom loves her son and then go to Mars and completely cut the knees under hundreds of moms and dads with cute children
cynically
at home. That
use that message, yeah.
Yeah, but it's also to because I really believe in Mars.
Right. I'm trying to usher humanity into the next phase of growth. I don't know.
I mean, we've seen him how he cynically uses and discards ideologies. You know, when you, because like that's it. It goes back to his talking to his mom. I've been thinking about that a lot. So we talked about it on the last episode. It's like, I'm not sure what to believe, because he abandoned that Harambe shit last season, not before he got backstabbed or not after he got backstabbed. He abandoned it when it went against his own self-interest.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think they're telling a story of Dev being kind of a corrupt, selfish person that likes to wallpaper his ambition and selfishness with high-minded ideals. And then when you know, people who have followed him because they bought into that system, when he reveals that it's all a bunch of bullshit, they no longer buy into it. Then he perceives that as persecution and betrayal. So it's like, yeah, I don't trust this guy. He doesn't even process information correctly, as far as mm-hmm. I can tell.
And I do wonder where the show's going with that. Are they trying to tell us that you need people who are self-interested and that have like their ego in mind when they're doing these very grandiose things that benefit humanity? And then at some point we need to discard them and use the systems that they've set up to better everyone. Maybe.
That doesn't feel very intellectually or ethically satisfying either.
Like, we'll cynically use.
Yeah, that's like, also possible. Yeah.
The thing that kills me about our situation is I don't see the satisfying path.
We
the
cynically use our betters
for everyone.
We cynically use our betters with resources to build big institutions and systems for us that then we just pilfer and take from them.
I mean, they pilfered and taken along the way, so it seems like turnabout is fair play there. Like, I would have no compunction about kicking Dev out of some utopia that he made because he doesn't agree with the, you know, the way that the utopia should go.
Yeah,
when
true.
It's clearly in the best interest of everybody else. Take him out, you know, good, thank him for his service and send him on the way with his paycheck. I don't know.
And it does seem like that's how a lot of progress is made, you know, like you get, like, you know, when people came to America, they started Jonestown, the first colony. Eventually, you know, James, Great Britain's Jamestown. Like Jamestown, rather. Yeah. Jonestown, something totally different.
Don't go to Jonestown.
And then eventually it got big enough to where like the powers of beer, like, yoink, this is actually, we're going to make states out of this. And then those states overthrew other states. And it's, so it's like, yeah, it's like at some point it's all just pickpocketing all the way down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's nasty business and it's complicated. And that's why I'm not like too hard on this story. Cause I think there were some failures of storytelling here, but there's a lot of just, it's messy. It's hard. It's messy. It's icky.
But it doesn't feel messy from Illumination. It feels messy because it's in the dark and I don't feel like they know what's going on either. Like if the messiness was part of the plot, but it feels like the messiness is the stuff you're noticing off frame and like in the writer's room to me. It doesn't feel like this is a really intractable, thorny problem. Yeah, I don't know. Let's keep on going because I'm arguing with a lot of the episode that hasn't even happened yet.
Yep, let's do it. So the astronauts go to start the generators but find all of their suits out on the surface. They also apparently don't have any rovers because the workers use those to block the airlocks at the generator facility. Danielle asks her team how they're going to solve this, and they decide to go under the ground instead of over it by using the sewage system. I don't know. I can't tell if it's a sewage system exactly, but it's a tunnel system to get to the generators. It's their gray water. Ugh.
Yeah, who has spacesuits left?
No one?
That's not possible. You can't leave all the spacesuits on the surface.
That's so what I was thinking. They're screwed. They're stuck here now until they get a suit supply. But
I don't even know how they do that. You'd have to get someone at the shuttle. Oh, I guess the shuttle could bring new suits, or apparently they can fabricate, they can sew more. But no, I think that there's a handful of suits still left. It's the only thing that makes sense.
Are they hidden away on level 4?
They must be, but like I don't know. It's because part of me is like, well, if we're gonna go to jackbooted goonery, they should have just done that and found the space suits. But like, eventually, if you continue to thwart the workers' legitimate efforts to keep you from scabbing them, you're going to make violence on one side or the other inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
And
which is why Deb's play is much better when he gets here, but.
And still. I just wish there was always someone in the room being like, as things got more desperate and as like now the astronauts are talking about crawling through gray water sewage, like no one, not even Danny would be like, can we just pay these people? You know, like, why can't we put pressure on Deb to pay these people? You know, it's $20 trillion we're chasing. Let's pay these people. Well, we're investing $1 trillion into equipment. Why can't we take a fraction of that and give it to the people?
Okay, so I think you're wrong. You're not taking into account their actual goal here. Their goal is not to get paid in the moment. Their goal is to get that asteroid around Mars, make it for them so that they have future job security as well. And that is something that absolutely cannot happen based on what we saw last episode with the negotiations with the M7. They're not willing to put up the money. Dev frames all this out later, right?
Yeah.
So it's not as simple as just pay them. They don't want money right now. What they want is money and future job security. And they're unable. They'll never get that. They'll never get it. So they're pushing. Ed is pushing them down a road that is an unattainable goal, which Dev is going to come in and say later in the episode. And that's the sticking point. It's not just, oh, here's an easy out. Let's just give them money.
And if Dev said, okay, you got to flex. Look, you have to flex on this thing because this is an unflexible thing. That would be one thing. And then like, but you know, we can get you paid. We can guarantee that like when mining operations transfer to Earth, that you guys will be the first, you know, like you guys are already trained to do this stuff. So you'll be the ones, we'll bring you back. I think they could have done that, But instead, it's like Dev's like, that's the one thing they won't flex on. And then you find out at the end of this episode, he's going to steal it anyway. Like I said, I need to wait for stuff in the future to happen. I'm borrowing too much trouble.
Danielle does offer, you know, through Helios, I guess she's been in communication, does offer some retraining, guaranteed retraining, which they turn down because it's bullshit, as they say.
And we know that's bullshit. Like every single, like, you know, the retraining that they've all, we've seen the bullshit training that you get if your sector gets, you know, downsized as a whole in the economy. It's not worth anything. You know, short of giving someone 4 years of college, that's what people need when they lose their entire livelihood in the middle and middle life. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, 6 weeks course on whatever. And if you look at, you know, I think John Oliver did a couple of years ago, like an expose on what these retraining programs are. Like some of it is just like literally like Adobe Flash software that teaches people to sort shapes and stuff. And it's like, oh, we're training you to, you know, work on a conveyor belt for FedEx or whatever. It's like, that's not career retraining.
Right.
That's just taking government money, wasting it, pocketing most of it, and not and saying you're helping people and not. So it's like, you know, but it just shows that like the gulf between, you know, what the Helios employees are asking for, which includes something like the moon that they can't ask for, but Danny just offering them something they're not even asking for and that they know is bullshit. It's like there was never a good faith effort from Helios to try to, like, I would have been impressed if Helios, if they came up with an offer that I think a person watching a television would be like, damn, maybe those workers are being a bit greedy. Mm-hmm. Maybe they are overreaching. Maybe the argument, like, I never felt like that. Now, maybe I'm just like, well, no, I know I'm extremely left-wing and progressive and pro-labor. So, like, maybe that's like, maybe you, if you're more conservative, you're watching a show and already at that point. So maybe I'm a bad reference point, but unfortunately, I'm the guy recording half of this podcast. So I would have loved to seen something where it made it feel like the powers that be were at least trying when they see how crazy the solutions that they keep engineering to get around the fact that we're just need to pay the people that can do this, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree. Danielle is not a great negotiator, and I think Dev comes in, he solves this problem basically immediately with one conversation.
And you know,
giving a lot of these workers everything they are asking for within reason, and more, surprising them with an offer that's so generous that most people cannot turn it down, and
for a limited time,
a FOMO
only,
thing too. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Not even just a FOMO, but FOMO plus everybody else is getting prosecuted.
It's also not clear to me why the astronauts and cosmonauts are like in rock solid solidarity with each other, because I feel like more than a few of them would be like, you know what? We were fine risking our lives and doing a whole bunch of shit work when we were doing this for like science and research and betterment and advancement of humanities. But like, we're doing it for Helios's pocketbook. What the fuck? Mm-hmm. You know, like not a single astronaut or cosmonaut wants to see their bottom line increase. They're fine with getting their government pay, even though, you know, guys like Dev might pocket a $1 trillion windfall. Like, that seemed unrealistic. That, like, the workers are having so much trouble maintaining solidarity, but on the astronaut and cosmonaut side, they're just, you know, they just get in line. That felt weird to me, too.
Hot pasta meals go a long way, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also thought it was fairly interesting to see how condescending and what a low opinion the astronauts have of these workers, because one of them, when they're trying to figure out, you know, whether they can use these tunnels, is like, oh yeah, this wouldn't even occur to them. These idiots are so dumb. Like, they haven't thought one step ahead of where they're going here. This wouldn't occur to them at all. Such condescending. You thought of it, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Why couldn't they? Of course they didn't.
That turns
we'll
out
see
they,
through
they
the
didn't,
show,
but
also
but they did grab one of your regulators, so they had a backup plan too. It's
just a really, you see the tension there. It's they don't even think of them as the same class of people.
Yeah. Well, we've seen, like, I can't remember, this summer, last summer, there was a strike where, like, their like internal memos went around where it's like upper management was like, well, we'll just run this thing. Fuck them. you know, and like they did that for like exactly one day, and then the strike was over the next day because they realized, oh shit, this is hard, we don't know what the fuck we're doing.
Yeah,
you know, like, so it's like there's a little bit of that mirrored here with the astronauts. Kind of, I agree, there's a note of arrogance of like, oh, these fucking, you know, maintenance, these janitors think they're going to like get one over on us. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when you got your Will Hunting in there.
And again, like, this guy like Palmer is going to like crawl through, you know, stinky bilge water to help mankind, but also to enrich very few people.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they'd represented that viewpoint.
No, it's hard. It's hard, but yeah, maybe they didn't do it as well as I could have. Margot reports to work as a newly defected member of the Soviet Union and gets a warmer welcome than she's used to. With her new seat at the table, literally, she helps set the record straight on Helios and NASA's relationship in one of these meetings. And Margot gives the team the information that Tatiana has calculated an intercept course for the asteroid. And Margot stays behind after the meeting is adjourned and is told by Irina that they want her to go to Houston to be the liaison with NASA.
I like this. This is another thing that we talked about a couple weeks ago, is that one of the problems throughout the Cold War is that, you know, Washington would constantly make decisions based on what they thought, their understanding of how Moscow saw the world, and Moscow would do the same, and they fundamentally just don't understand because they're within the societies they live in. It's clear that this old Politburo member, the idea that there's an American company where the principal CEO would tell the president, just go fuck yourself. You know, like, is like that's not how any of their companies, even in like the Glasnost area, would have been run. So it's like he thinks that's just, this is bullshit. Like, clearly Helios is acting in bad faith to fuck over Russia for the expense of at their expense for U.S.'s benefit. Mm-hmm. When Margot knows, no, Helios is happy to fuck over everybody and make everybody pay up. They're going to get a sweetheart deal to America. I thought that was interesting. Bold of her to just laugh at this guy, though.
That's the thing. And as he leaves the room, he gives a kind of look over toward the camera and Margot and Rena. And like, he didn't appreciate that.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
But I don't know what power he has here. I wonder if they're trying to tell the story of women getting a lot more power in that government structure in this fictionalized timeline, because you see that, like, the interactions I've seen with them feel like they are not nearly as progressive. Stop me if you think I'm wrong about this. Not nearly as progressive as the For All Mankind U.S. is.
I don't know, because like Bullfinch is running the place, right? I think what you're seeing as skepticism for Margot being a woman is more skepticism because she's a filthy imperialist capitalist, and
yeah, this could be my version of misunderstanding,
and a spy, so they don't trust her anyway, and they're kind of like, probably don't think that she should be running this joint. That's what I thought, because like, how do I square that with the respect that the Bullfinch covers? And in fact, the whole reason that America was playing catch up with the Soviet Union is because, like, I feel like, and my independent study of the matter is that, yeah, there were some things that the Russians were more egalitarian than us in terms of like women, female scientists, engineers, education. Like, they were more on board with that, but then again, there's never been a woman premier. So it's like, you know, maybe there was a little bit of a glass ceiling. It was higher in, you know, in the 1960s in Russia than it was here in the United States, but maybe it is still there.
Yeah, I don't know, it could just be me fundamentally misunderstanding the Russian hierarchy there.
Yeah.
Next up, Aleda and her family watch her pre-recorded Eagle News interview with Goldie about Goldilocks, but more importantly about her feelings on the traitor Margot Madison. And she is shocked to hear that Margot is coming back to Houston. And that whole interview just ends spectacularly. And I guess the follow-on here on this is Aleda and her husband also talk about what a provocation Margot's return is, both personally and nationally. And he tells her that she should push back. I don't like his assessment of her reaction in this interview, just saying, oh, don't worry about it. This will all blow over in no time. Why does this need to blow over? She was lured here under false pretenses to talk about something and put on the spot on live television. Well, not live, pre-recorded television. She didn't agree to this interview. This particular interview, she thought she was here for a very different reason. She was ambushed. I think it's perfectly warranted to tell this person, fuck you, and storm off the set.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I think it's perfectly legit to hold a grudge against Margot the rest of your life. You know, she can regret it and feel sorry, but like, you can still not forgive her. Like, that's a big betrayal that they fostered on her, for sure.
Sometimes the decorum is not warranted. When people trick you and mislead you and exploit you, fuck your decorum. I'm gonna tell you what an awful person you are, and I'm gonna storm out and not participate in your bullshit. Sorry.
Yeah, I agree. I also want to talk about Elaida and Margot and that scene that we just, because the one thing we didn't talk about in the scene before is Margot's taking a shine to that one young Russian woman engineer.
Tatiana.
They definitely sent Tatiana to be like the Russian Elaida.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think that's going? Is that going? Are they building her up so that she can be KGB black bagged and kind of like turn Margot against her Russian masters? Or like, what is
like
there anything
husband?
That can turn Margot? Because Margot's going for like, I'm above politics. I am here for the science and for the asteroid, and I don't care if it's very von Braun, you know. It's like, I worked under the Nazis, but not because I like the Nazis, because I wanted to do rocket science, and then I worked for the Americans. And do you think she's doing kind of similar thing, or is there a line that she will not cross, speaking of all these cross lines?
Is there a line she won't cross? I don't know. I feel like she's crossed every line that I could really think of. I mean, she's divulged national secrets. She's defected. She's delivered a speech claiming that the U.S. is horrible and that Russia is amazing. Like, I'm trying to think of the next line she could potentially cross.
Yeah.
If she's asked to black bag someone herself, like, here, take this bag and stick it over Tatiana's head. Maybe.
Yeah, that's I feel like they're building her into where the, she has no line that she won't cross, that she is justified so much.
Mm-hmm.
But
she's
most of
too
the
invested.
Most of the things that she's had to borne were carried by herself, you know. It's like she could always say, it's like, well, I didn't blow up the NASA building. That was some kind of terrorist. And I just, you know, I didn't ask to be saved from that. It's like, but if, that, you know, they go after like her Elaida equivalent in Russia for no good reason, I could see that, that snapping her out of whatever she's in.
Yeah, we'll
but
see.
Also,
I mean, because they could just explain it away, you know? Oh, we didn't do anything to Tatiana. She left, you know?
I mean, Dark Margot is a pretty interesting plot line to go down.
I suppose so.
It's an amoral science scientist.
Yeah, we'll see where that goes. So we're back in Happy Valley, or I guess in orbit first, where Kelly, Alex, and Deb are coming down from the Phoenix. Kelly and Alex are greeted by Danielle. Deb is greeted by Palmer. And then Danielle takes him off to talk about the new developments. And then Ed spots Kelly, gives her a warm greeting, but Alex doesn't want to hug him. And he tries not to let that bother him.
Might be because Kelly just shoulder checked her son's face. Did you see that awkward? is that the best take they had? Because he was kind of like pulling away from grandpa and going into her, like, you know, like kids do, like kind of put her face in. At the same time, Kelly was getting on her knees to like go into his level, and his face just goes bam into her shoulder. Just right in the face, and the kid kind of like staggers back. It's like they covered him up, but that's the only thing I can notice on subsequent watches.
He'll be fine. He's got that Martian air in him now.
Yeah. I was wondering what the Martians would think about a kid being brought to the base in the midst of all this. We're not going to, none of that's, yeah, we're not going to.
Nope.
We're not going to see any of that talked about. That's not going to be, yeah, that's just its own separate deal.
Yeah, not here in this 40-minute episode, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you think about, were you surprised that Kelly's kid was a little bit reserved around Ed?
I suppose I was a little surprised, but he is effectively a stranger. I mean, I know he's got, you know, messages from him and his mom's been telling him, hey, this is your grandpa, but he's never met him. I could see it.
Yeah, I think it rung true to me. I was a little surprised with how high he was on Poppy and how disappointed he was he wasn't coming home, but maybe he has internalized that and he had to scare his mom maybe abandoning him. And
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I wonder if there's something tied into that too.
Yeah, it could be.
I will say this. Talked about the fact that this show's pretty lazy about the differences in gravity between Earth and Mars. Palmer, like when he like I don't know if it's written like this or he improvised it, but when Kelly handed her his bags, they did the like gag where the guy's like, "Ugh," when he picks up this woman's bags. There's not a fucking bag Kelly could have possibly packed that would have had an adult male in reasonable health grown under the strain on 1/3 Earth's gravity. Like, this is just, again, the easiest fucking thing in the world is to have these big bags and then the guy just effortlessly pick them up because it's 1/3 Earth gravity.
Yeah.
I'm not expecting people to God forbid people adjust their gait or, you know, pay like, but like this was the I was shocked at Palmer, like, ugh, when he's lifting this stuff up, like, oh, God, the girl, she packs so much shit. Like, just little things, little things.
Depleted uranium slugs. I don't know. Tungsten slugs in that bag.
Yeah, she packed all those Boston Dynamics life-sniffing dogs, and they're all made out of, like you said, depleted uranium, and they're all in those bags. Okay, maybe.
Maybe.
But still, yeah. Everyone remember, like, you know what? If I was directing these episodes, if I was on Happy Valley, every time I was about to roll cameras, I'd be like, all right, everybody, remember Mars gravity, 1/3 Earth. All right, go. Like, just little, you know, just a little bit, just a little lightness of your step. Mm-hmm. Remember that when you're lifting something heavy, it shouldn't be as heavy as it is. Like, I don't know, but there's no one does any of that stuff on this show. It's like there's zero awareness of it.
Seems like it.
It's getting to the point when they're, like, piloting spaceships and stuff they don't even, like, they used to, like, kind of hang their arms and stuff when they were, you know, like, Ed was strapped into, like, the Ranger. They don't even do that shit anymore. It's just, like, they're just in the cockpit of a 747, man.
Uh-huh.
Running the long haul from L.A. to Australia.
T-minus 3 seconds until the ad.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more.
We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
Touchdown, and we're back. Speaking of things that are different on Mars, the doctor examines Alex. He's doing better here than on Earth, and he tells Kelly about working with her father. Or I guess he tells Alex about working with his grandfather.
Yeah. Good scene. I mean, there's basically telling that the Kelly's surmisal about her son's health is correct. There's something interesting about him being more home here than Earth. I am wondering if they're setting up Kelly's kid to be the first true Martian. Like there's going to be some kind of symbolic significance to him. He was conceived on Mars. He was made from Mars. Like, you know, some kind of broader point they're going to make about humanity. I can't quite pick it out yet, but it does look like they're doing something there.
I think everything they're doing with the Baldwin family is telling us they're like the true first Martian family. Like Kelly's never going back either. I mean, between never going back and Alex being better up here than he is on Earth, she's never going back. And I don't even know if it's a possibility at this point. With the developments at the end of this episode, you steal an asteroid from Earth. I don't know how that changes the calculations on who comes and goes from Mars, but I think it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, will Mars be a rogue state?
I think there's huge potential for Mars to have Mars to be blockaded from one direction or another.
Or could it be taken over by the North Koreans? Because I feel like the CIA plot is setting us up for North Koreans to be armed to the teeth and ready for, like, you know, they've got all these military age people with secreted weapons, and they're going to let, you know, like Dev thinks that he is the master of everything. But, you know, a lot of times when big companies like that run against nation states, they forget about the monopoly of force. You know, Dev doesn't have a private army. No one on Mars has, like, you know, like they got one or two CIA guys with like plastic bullets. What if the North Koreans just have a couple of AK-47s, you know, like
KGB's got some people up there. Yeah, that's what I'm super interested to see is how this shakes out power wise, because there's going to be a power struggle for Mars once Dev declares his intentions.
It's an escalation, like, you know, just like, you know, you say, I'm not going to load your fuel. Fine, we'll do it ourselves. We're going to steal all your suits. We're going to crawl through the pipes. We're going to disable the pipes. Like, what is the countermeasure for Dev stealing a 20 trillion asteroid from Mother Earth?
I don't believe they've considered it.
I don't think Marv and the Bullfinch are going to be like, oh my God, we let this guy steal our asteroid.
We'll get him next time. No, definitely. Although there's going to be repercussions.
That would be that'd be on brand for Marv to completely be ill prepared for someone to resist. Yeah,
totally.
Very wet bandit of him.
So Palmer's crew slowly makes their way through the shit tunnels. They make it to the generators and begin starting the backup. There will be complications here in a bit. That's just kind of a getting to the point scene. So I feel like we should.
I was scared to death this whole time that, like, there's going to be something more sinister, like the workers, like, finding out they're going through the pipes and they just flood the pipes.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, I do not want to see these guys drown in these tubes on Mars. That seems like worse than drowning in tubes on Earth somehow.
Dying on Mars is always worse than dying on Earth, I think.
Yeah.
It's got to be more painful.
And the rescue attempts are more fraught, you know? But it turns out, like, I was right to be nervous because these people were doomed one way or another.
Yeah, I was just waiting for it to get worse. All the way up until the point that it did.
Yeah.
It didn't really surprise me that things went fucko up here. So it's family spaghetti dinner time in Ed's quarters. Kelly brought the shitty powdered Parmesan, and Ed puts it on Alex's food, even though he didn't want him to. And then Ed and Kelly are kind of seemingly on opposite sides of the strike here. Ed's fighting to make this place a quote-unquote real home, and she's all about the research that could be done. And then somebody comes in and says, Ed, we have a problem.
Yes.
Was it the quantity of cheese that Alex objected to? Because I saw what Ed did to his own pasta, and that was horrendous.
It is pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
Like, the cheese, the quality of the cheese is bad, sure, but a little bit, yeah, you might enjoy that, but my God, it's more cheese than pasta, man.
It feels like it'd be dry and dusty.
Yeah, powdery in your mouth, terrible.
Yeah, like you're taking a cinnamon challenge only with grated Kraft Parmesan. Ugh. Yeah, it's also just like clearly that this kid has not been raised this way. He's not like, you know, he doesn't express a preference and people just ignore it, you know. And he's already kind of unsure about Ed, and now and Ed just like really sticks his dick into the mud here. Like, you know, Kelly worked at McMurdo and thought it was a very worthwhile thing. And in fact, I got the feeling that like that was a friction point with her and Ed, that like, you know, Ed comes up, it's like, hey, I got you a ticket to Mars. And she's like, yeah, but I'm doing my research here. And he's like, oh, that's stupid. Mm-hmm. And he goes right back to it. It's like, you know, she's like, hey, even if Earth takes the asteroid, like Mars will still be an important, you know, research out. And he's like, oh, great. It's going to be a backwater like McMurdo. And she's like, what the fuck? You're coming after like a big part of my career again, old man. Like, he's just, And it's funny, you mentioned the Parmesan. The way they filmed that, I actually, for a split second, thought that they were making a point, like, he's uncontrollably shaking it. Like, this is, like, this is how much cheese Ed wants to put on spaghetti, and then the Parkinson's took over, and it's, like, him and Kelly both slowly being horrified, but it's, like, no, he wants that much cheese.
The game. He can't stop until the tremors stop.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they'll know.
Yeah, no, I got to cover it by putting it on my grandson. See, you guys got to put way too much cheese. Like,
oh my God.
I was expecting Kelly to grab his wrist and like, Dad, are you okay? And him to do, but no, he just wants that much fucking cheese.
Yeah, I feel like that's consistent. He's the cheese man when it comes to spaghetti night.
I got to go back and watch season two to see how much, because I felt like he used to like maybe a tablespoon, which is too much, I think.
Well, he's been up on Mars. I mean, when's the last time he's had this shitty Parmesan, man? He's overdoing it, but it's been a while.
So he's going to go through a fourth of his cheese supply that he can never replenish. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. For that first meal, I mean, he remembers how delicious it is.
Yeah.
All right, so Ed's informed that the fuel plant is starting again. However, one of their people grabbed the flow regulator, so they won't be able to run them. The astronauts notice that missing regulator and try to bypass it, and they do manage to get it working temporarily, but something goes wrong and the system explodes.
Motion to refer to astronauts acting in this capacity as astroscabs and Russians as cosmoscabs.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what they are. That's the real line. We're crossing picket lines to management, crossing picking lines to try to run the factories themselves.
Totally.
And
God, causing chaos, like what I assume is a life-threatening situation for everyone on the base.
Yeah, and it's like I'm reminded of that phrase, like if you make peaceful protest impossible, that you will get violent resistance in its place.
Mm-hmm.
Because at what point, you know, someone will eventually have to go to direct violence as part of these countermeasures. And if it's the workers that do it first, they're terrorists, you know, and if the companies do it first, they're just, you know, they're just they're making tough economic calls. So it just seems like the decks are stacked against these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So Aleta barges into Eli's office to tell him that he needs to stop Margo from coming to Houston. And Eli says, well, my hands are tied. Can't do that. And the conversation is interrupted by the notification of the explosion at Happy Valley.
It's funny because like I wish they did more with these debates because Alita is like, well, you know, this is like having the moon defector lead up our space program, and Marv has the reasonable take of like, well, yeah, but Margot, that you know, if we did that, then the Russians would be like, well, what is his qualifications to run this program? Like, Margot is the person running that program, and she's a brilliant engineer. There's reasons of, but like, I feel like Alita also, this is kind of like another labor thing where she could dig in her heels and just be like, well, none of us at NASA or Helios are going to work with this traitor. But
she could.
Instead, it's like they're just like one or two dance moves, and Alita is just like, but I guess I'll have to acquiesce here. Or maybe not. Maybe they're setting up for some resistance from Helios and NASA next episode. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting if Alita and Margot are brought into proximity, which they almost, you know, unless she stonewalls, they certainly will be.
But the show is kind of like unreasonable where it's like, he's like, hey, you know, the M7 charter. She's like, fuck the M7. It's like, well, you can't do that. You know, you can't just disregard the agreements you've made. But I don't know, because it feels like all season, the M7 is constantly being appealed to. But yeah, people violate the spirit and letter of that all the time. So,
and Eli himself has at one point said, well, you know, that was under the old regime, right? Those agreements don't stand anymore.
Exactly.
Because your government changed under coup. It's complicated, but I do think it's going to be, I mean, Alita, so the thing is, like, Alita's running Helios as far as, like, the back and forth between the governments here. She doesn't have any real reason that she would have to work with Margot other than the financial interest, right? Like, she could stonewall this, and there's nothing really that the government could do about it. She could say, nope, Margot's not going to be the liaison because Helios will not work with her. And that's fine if you guys don't want to work with Helios, but Helios has all the power up on Mars. So good luck with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's what's going to happen. I don't know if that's where Alita wants to take it, but we'll see. So the explosion victims are carted into the med bay with serious burns, and some don't survive.
They actually didn't get those burns in the accident. They got those burns from Palmer dragging them high speed through that tube.
Friction burns.
Yeah. Those are pipe burns, not like from a cocaine or crack pipe, mm-hmm. from a coolant pipe, ironically.
What happens when you get gray water in your open wounds?
Nothing good. Nothing good. No? I don't think you get compost seepage in open wounds that anything good happens. And like, I just don't understand why they couldn't make it a pull like that, because that would have added the grayness of it if like the workers were horrified and that they had in an act of like compassion and solidarity with everyone on Mars had been like, oh, here's our suits, we're going to go back and get like at, you know, they could have been an all hands on deck, and then the contrast of what, you know, Washington and Moscow are doing to the workers would be even greater. But again, I think weirdly this show is kind of on the establishment side, you know, like I think the show's it's definitely calling attention to the fact that terrorism stuff is bullshit, but I think it's closer to what the show's opinion is than they want to let on.
Maybe. I'm going to have to see the fullness of this season to see what their point is, like which side they come down on, because they are painting a very complicated picture, because the issue is complicated, you know, the way all of our interests are entangled. It's weird.
Yeah, so, I'm just like, as I'm calling balls and strikes, I look at this episode and I go back to what I said in the beginning, where every single time the workers threw up a complication to NASA, it was playing the challenging, dangerous crisis music for Danny and her team. And every time Danny and her team overcame, it was triumphant, you know, Ed sticking the landing on Mars, you know, Gordo and Tracy turning the reactor coolant flow on. And then when the thing exploded back, the chaos, it just seems like, or the at least the show's composer is on the establishment side.
Well, they're on Danny's side. I mean, Danielle is the sympathetic person up here on Mars. No one else aside from like Sam, I guess. The workers are sympathetic, but they want an unattainable goal. She's doing her best to try to make deals that she's not even able to really make. Like, she can't come in with $2 trillion and make this good, right? And like Dev can.
Yeah, and there's like, maybe we needed more of this, but when she says, "I've done my level best to help you people," like,
we don't know what it is.
The only thing I've actually seen you do is establish communications. Like, that's
there's
like
been
and
week
maybe
that we skipped, and I don't know what negotiations went on, so it's hard to tell.
But
right,
I think we could have. I think we could have seen Danielle, because like what I have seen Danielle is behind the scenes privately agreeing with them. But like whenever she's dealing with Sam or anyone that's actually a representative of the workers, she's pretty cold and aloof, and she really toes that company line, which she probably should as a commander. But I never then like, you know, like that does damage that like a throwaway line of like, Dev, your people have problems and they're legitimate issues, like. You know, but again, like, what am I expecting? Danny to, like, bring that into her public, you know, negotiations with these workers?
Well, her motives are pure. That's the thing that always, like, puts me on Danny's side, is her motives are pure. Even when she's siding with capital over labor here, she's doing it because she believes in something. And it's, there's no easy route to get the thing that she believes in. So
I want to say that
that's
up
why
until...
the show...
Up until she deputizes the goon squad, it's very hard for me to be like, okay, people, this isn't why we're up here, but this is happening. It's crucial that
it does
we
feel
like
a line has been crossed. Like,
well,
you know,
that's, that's what the episode's called, right?
And she would defend it by saying, well, I'm just trying to get this asteroid for the good of all mankind.
For
right?
the good
like
of
this,
all mankind. Right.
Yeah. But and that would be her motive.
But this is classic.
And the show is saying that through the music. They're saying Danielle has the pure motives here, everybody else is self-interested.
But this is for all mankind in the animal farm sense of the word. And I think that's the problem, is like that, like, yes, it's for all mankind, but some mankind are more, get more of the, their share of the pie than others. It's for everybody, sure. But the pigs are going to eat at the trough before anybody else gets a chance. And those pigs ain't lifting a hoof to do any work. It's like,
she'd probably say, well, I can't change that. The only thing I can do is
get
this asteroid, right?
I have to work within the system to do. Yeah, I get it. I get it. And
that's why it's so sticky. That's why it's so complicated.
Would love to see some of those internal wrestlings of her, like, you know, like it'd be nice if we had a character that she could like has a sounding board. It's like, maybe it's like they shouldn't have killed off Kuz, because it'd be interesting to had to see
or
like
turned
Ed
so violently against her, right?
yeah like maybe they disagree but they still had gotten together. And because I don't know that they need, I still don't understand why they needed Ed being on the other side of this thing, just so that Dev can win him over somehow. I gotta wait to see how the rest of the season goes, but it's like, again,
I can
squint and see
asteroid.
All this, but I don't know that they're telling that story particularly well, and maybe not even at all. They could be telling a story that I'm completely not on board with, and then
we'll see. So Eli gets casualty report down on Earth. Apparently one's dead, more injured. He's told by somebody from the Gore administration. Every week it's a new person from the government. Who, last week it was Ron. I don't know who the fuck this guy is.
Bob.
But he says, okay, Ron and Bob. How much more generic could we possibly get with the names?
Well, it's super funny. Do you know who this guy is? Because I'm like, I know this guy's face. I've seen this guy. He's like Cousin Larry from Perfect Strangers, but not exactly. Do you know Weird Al Yankovic's sidekick in UHF? The guy that was helping him manage the station?
No.
Do you know UHF?
I can't recall. Yeah, I know UHF.
That's
certainly.
This guy. That's this guy that was helping him do Volcano Worshiping Hours and Wheel of Fish. And do you know what his name on that movie is?
I'm assuming it's Bob.
It's Bob. I think this is a UHF joke. I think this is just a UHF joke.
Well, hi, Bob. It's nice to have you on For All Mankind.
Exactly, right?
Yeah, that's funny.
His name's David Bowie, too. That's super funny, right?
What?
This guy's real life name is David Bowie.
No.
Spelled B-O-W-E.
Wow. Nice. So yeah, the David Bowie here tells Eli that the CIA has a spy with weapons on Happy Valley. They might be able to use to get things under control. Eli immediately shuts that idea down hard. And then Will suggests essentially the same idea, just by deputizing astronauts to take over the station. And Eli agrees to that.
I think an unarmed goon squad is a notch or two below an armed police state.
CIA takeover?
Yeah, right? It's a notch or two. It's a notch or two. It's not a big, but like...
It's the same in kind, but not in severity, I guess.
Yeah, like there's accountability that like a CIA black ops on Mars wouldn't have, you know?
Sure.
And again, they don't have weapons. Now they've got this attenuated energy projectile system that's in play. Mm-hmm. We also know that there's still there's a North Korean pistol that's in play. Mm-hmm. I think, like, I haven't forgotten about it. I don't think Lee's forgotten about it. It is funny that Marv. It's not clear to me why he thought that the CIA thing was insane. And that, like, you know, he's clearly uncomfortable stopping his terrorist attacks. But then when Will's like, you know, we got a lot of ex-military people up there. We could probably just get the most gung-ho Marines and the most the craziest of the whatever the Russian side of that is, and get him to just rough people up. And he's like, yeah, let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that similar in kind,
but.
Yeah, what is that phenomenon? It's like moral license where, you know, by presenting a worse option, you can make a bad option seem palatable.
Yeah.
Like, if Will just came in his office like, hey, I was thinking, we got a bunch of ex-military people up there. Russia does, too. What if we just deputize them, muscle up, and start kicking in doors? And, you know, he'd be like, Jesus Christ, that sounds horrific. Mm-hmm. But on the back of the CIA guy saying, hey, let's use our... These are James Bond gear up there to cow the resistance.
Also, what does this solve? Because right now this is about punishment. This is not about solving the problem. I don't think this is necessarily going to get any workers back to work.
Well,
okay,
I mean,
so you find the regulator, you find who had it, who was responsible for that, and you charge them. Okay, you still got the strike going on.
I think it's interesting because I did some looking up in this, you know, I hear a term I've never heard before, this attenuated energy projectile system. The world's very first one was invented by the British, and they called it a baton round, and it was designed specifically to deal with riots and protests during the Troubles with Ireland. So I hear a CIA, I'm hearing we're essentially sending in the Pinkertons with nightsticks, and we're going to club the workers.
Yeah,
and essentially, yeah, the force them back to work. We're gonna use the power of the state against them.
That sounds like what it is, but they don't do any of that. That's never
right.
The show shows us they just toss their quarters looking for this regulator.
There's some jackbooted thuggery, but not with like what. But like, I do wonder, because that's the thing. It's like, well, what? So let's say how many of those baton rounds do you think you got up there in Mars? You know, 50, 100. If I think that's a crazy amount for a CIA operation to have. Let's say they got 50, 100.
Ilya probably found it. He's got it. The cargo came up. His contact said, hey, you want this? Yeah.
I do wonder, like, what's their plan for, like, when they run out of their last baton round and now they have a workforce that outnumbers them, what do you think, 10 to 1?
And is pissed off.
And is pissed
and
because they've had baton rounds
violence.
Used after them and they've got lead pipes and everything else. What do you think is going to happen? Yeah. It does seem it's all short-sighted, but... It's nakedly short-sighted because they're like, well, we got like a couple weeks to get this, and if not, we lose the opportunity forever.
But they don't tell that story. If they showed them coming in with batons and batons of both kinds, you know, coming in and beating the shit out of workers to get them back to work, then I buy that's about getting this asteroid. This just feels punitive. This feels like we want to find the person responsible right now. Yeah. And they're ignoring the bigger problem, which is we still don't have this asteroid and now we don't have a fuel refinery.
I think it's putting little pressure because I think that the blonde lady that did the disabling of the pump It seems like one of the big reasons she crossed a line is that, like, the amnesty for prosecution. Like, when she sees the base, you know, everyone's turning stuff, she starts, I think she's sweating bullets. So I definitely think pressure was applied. And I did think they showed some pretty grade A jackbooted thuggery. Like, those people coming in his quarters, like, they were busting people up when they tried to get in their way. And you're right, it seemed extremely punitive in a lot of the way these raids do. Like, not like, hey, we have reason to believe you might have blah, blah, blah. Let's come in and do a... It's just tossing shit, throwing it onto the floor, ripping things up, tearing things up. And it's like, part of it is the humiliation and the lack of control. Part of that is the point. It's not just investigatory. It's, like you said, punitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't punitive enough, I guess, to make it feel like they were really trying to accomplish something here.
Well, we still got the CIA in the back pocket.
True.
And I bet they wouldn't follow the chain of command either. I bet Al Gore could just personally activate them and they just do it. Like, they're no liaising with Danny or nothing. Just chunk, chunk, we're ready with the baton rounds. Here we go.
Speaking of back pockets, I'm not sure how Dev thinks he's going to accomplish his goal of stealing this asteroid now that there's no fuel being made on Mars and won't be for the foreseeable future. That whole facility is gone.
Well, I think he's got him back. I think he's got the majority of the workers back working on it. And I think that you're...
What good is that if you don't have the spacecraft fueled up to go catch
this
asteroid?
Well, but I think you're supposed to understand, because Dev says today, if we don't start today repairing the facility and loading the spaceships, it will be too late. So, like, I think you're supposed to understand that it's just on the border of being feasible. If like 100 workers go back to work, start repairing the facility and start refueling things, they could do it.
It felt like it was just feasible weeks ago before
you're supposed to also understand Elaida's plan, which we don't know what the fuck it is because it was all yada 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 with stirring music played under. Elaida's plan is so fucking brilliant to redirect that to Earth rather than Mars that it uses a fraction of the propellant.
And but now they're redirecting it to Mars. I mean,
well, there
so
you
it
go.
Should be 10
yeah,
times
you're right.
The propellant.
Right.
I mean, it's
yeah.
It's,
like, what is Dev? Does Dev have a super secret, even sneakier plan?
So when I wonder if he's got like maybe reserves on the Phoenix that they don't know about, or
they're
going to
send it to Earth
with him,
but it's going to be on a slingshot trajectory, so it just goes around Earth, slingshots back to Mars.
That'd be funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
He catches it on the way back. Yeah.
Yeah, and I that actually might be what they're doing. Because then Earth
would be hilarious. Then, yeah.
But I would think Earth would see it. That's like, this is not coming in the projectile for a capture orbit. It's coming
they'd
in
see
for
it, but what are they going to do about it? Like, what are they going to put something in front of it to try and stop it? They don't have the means to grab it, right? All of the
would
equipment
Earth
that
nuke
they need,
an asteroid just out of spite?
Maybe. Like, I think that's going to be part of the...
Because that's... Yeah, like, when's the brinksmanship stop, right?
Right. Right.
Like, we're not going to let you steal this thing. We will nuke this thing rather than see you stare like that. But now we are firmly in expanse. This is 23rd century Martian Earth politics.
No, I mean, shit has changed at the end of this episode. Like, if Dev actually executes any kind of plan to try and steal this asteroid, it's essentially war between the two planets. And they don't have the means to directly, like, fight a war at the moment. But it's going to be a cold war between Mars and Earth.
When you said Dev's going to execute this, were you making a DMX pun?
No.
He should have taken credit for it because it's a pretty good one.
Was it? See, I don't even know enough about DMX to know.
Dev's going to execute. Yeah, it's just X. You know, X going to give it to him. Dev's going to execute.
Yeah, okay.
See, now that I explain the joke, it's a million times funnier.
Right. It always is. Why does Will even warrant being in this meeting? I don't remember what position he is, but he's finding out about national secrets here with the CIA being up on Happy Valley. It doesn't seem like he would want to have that discussion in front of an underling.
I think he's got Molly Cobb's old position. He's like the director of astronaut affairs. You know, he's like has final say on all the astronaut blah, blah, blah. So I think it made sense for him to be in the room.
The CIA stuff feels like a one-on-one with the director of NASA, but what do I know?
True. Feels like anyway. Al Gore should have been in that room. That's the other thing. Feels like a lot of these meetings should have taken place at the White House.
But the deepfakes were too expensive, yeah.
And if it was Ellen, it would have been. But now it's Al Gore, yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah, that's a real bummer. Because you're right. They should be in a conference room at the White House.
Yeah.
I also found it very offensive to label the Helios workers terrorists in this scene. We talked about it a little bit, but they were not the cause of the explosion. And trying to lump them in with the explosion at JSC before is vile. It's disgusting.
Well,
I
wish
exactly
it was the worst
how the government would respond.
I wish it was the worst thing the CIA has ever done, but unfortunately, that's not true.
No, it's done with such a casualness too. It's just like, oh yeah, and these people are terrorists now. I'm like, what? No,
and the thing
your
is,
own
it's like,
idiocy got you here.
And the thing is like, I got it from Bob here that this is a genuine belief. Like, he actually thinks that an argument can be made that these people are terrorists of the same stripe as the people that blew up the JSC. And it is insane. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that Marv says so, but yeah. And it shows just how easy it is to get that twisted up. It's like, well, people died because of other people's actions. Like, well, those other people's actions weren't even proximate to it.
Nope.
Like, we had an astronaut on the ground say, this is a bad idea. You can't just bypass a regulator. That's primary. We got a secondary here.
We had people untrained on the equipment working on it. And that's what caused the explosion. That's the cause. The thing is, they're setting up something dangerous, which is treating labor movements as terrorist groups, which is frightening, right? Because like the only connection here between the two things is there's a proto-union forming on Mars that is working against the government's interest, and those people who bombed the JSC were disaffected former energy workers. Like that's like the most, that's the closest connection, and it's extremely tenuous.
Yeah, and on a good economic policy could have probably prevented both. This is the other sad fact.
Yeah, absolutely. So I wonder if that's going to be an issue going forward. We'll see. Danielle briefs the new security detail, sends them out to find out who stole the flow regulator. They toss the crew quarters, destroying people's personal belongings. Like we said, this is pretty punitive. And just saying, we need to find those responsible for that explosion. Your guys were responsible for it. You are responsible for it, Danny. Sorry. Hate to tell you.
We'll be back right after this spacewalk.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. Strap in, we're diving into more For All Mankind. Yeah, like I said, this is where Saint Danny's halo starts to get a little tarnished because...
Yeah, I agree.
She is, I think... she's carrying the water a little bit too much. It's disappointing.
It's hilarious to look back on earlier in the season when Danny was approached to come up here and how she reacted with Ed and me thinking, this is exactly what the base needs. Danielle's going to come here and solve all the problems that Ed's, you know, oblivious to the workers' nature has caused. Kinder, gentler Danny's gonna fix it all. Nope. Not even close.
Do you think there's a little bit of her personal beef with Ed getting through into here too? That like she is you know, all of Helios' struggle is Ed's rebellion in her mind. Because I, like I said, I thought she was a little bit more sympathetic to the workers than this. And she's as, she's closer to the ground as anybody. She should know that, like, this all this terrorism stuff is a bunch of bullshit.
Maybe I'm just giving her the benefit of the doubt, but I feel like there's a little bit of that in there. Like, she would acknowledge, yeah, I'm kind of pissed at Ed, too. But I'd still feel like her primary motivation is getting this asteroid for the good of all mankind.
Yeah. There's something about that speech. He's like, you know, none of us came here for this, but now we're here and we got to get this. Like, but are you there? And do you have to?
Yeah.
It'd be nice just to see one of the astronauts, you know, who are all highly educated to be like, I've done the back of the math calculations on this for how many people are in Happy Valley. The likely profits, like not even 1% of the profits of a year could make all this go away. Just have somebody say it.
But it can't. I mean, that's the sticking point here is they want something that's unattainable.
Yes, they're going to have to flex
never,
on the Mars thing,
ever,
except
ever
for they're
them.
Not because Dev's going to steal it. But like, I think that you could give them a package that was generous enough and has a plan for their future. Like, we're going to commit that everyone on Mars is going to get redirected to low Earth orbit to do the mining.
But they
operations.
Don't believe them. I mean, there's a fundamental breakdown of trust here too. Because when they talk about, you know, a guaranteed retraining package, they say that's bullshit. It's not even.
Well, this
even
time,
that they've seen
this time
outline.
You get a. But here I'm gonna push back on these fucking laborers a little bit. You got worked. You got job because you didn't read your fucking contract. So now that you're all in solidarity and you rework the contract, get a union lawyer to look over it. Because, like, contracts aren't bullshit. Like, they mean something. Or else, you know, people wouldn't fight over them, right? So, like, yeah, okay, you don't believe people. Get that shit in writing. And I guess that's another problem is, like, Dev didn't... This was all a handshake deal he does at the end of the episode. But I don't know. Like I said, it's just this season needed to be twice as long or something to tell, because no matter how they end the asteroid plot, I still think the organized crime. That's the other thing is like, where the hell was Miles? I know he's doing his own thing, but like, does none of this stuff concern him? Is the labor now that Ed knows that there's a criminal enterprise going on? There's no. Use or like I'm surprised they didn't lay the organized crime organized labor pipeline a little bit more this episode, because it feels like they're definitely going to connect those pipes at some point, but is a missed opportunity. Miles has disappeared this episode.
Had a couple mean mugs between him and Ilya, but that was it. Let's go on to Ed trying to keep his the pressure on. His people putting the pressure on him. Dev shows up and tells everyone that he respects them, but that their goal is impossible. But he has a solution. He offers them a 40% increase in pension, a health plan, a generous health plan, shares of Helios stock, better safety regulations, amnesty from prosecution, which I'm not even sure he can offer, and a quadruple pay bonus for the first 100 people to cross the line. And he appeals to the love of their families and gets them to give in.
Yeah, it's so funny because he's like, don't, you know, what's this abstract notion of togetherness? Like, that's a direct shot at his mom. That's not what's important to you. What's important is your family and da 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 da. He's using Harambe against them.
Yeah. And Ed says he's trying to buy us off. And, you know, I said earlier, this is textbook union busting stuff. You know, offer enough of the group a sweetheart deal that they will be forced essentially to take it, and then the rest of the group falls apart because they don't have the numbers. Textbook stuff. Here's the thing, he offers some things that, like, I don't know, there's an interesting tension here between like the storytelling and the offer that make it feel like he's right in some spaces, because like, we know for a fact that the thing they're asking for, which is this asteroid to come to Mars, will never happen.
People might be like, it. How do you know that? Because we already saw the powers that be were going to let this asteroid go rather than fund a $10 trillion project that wouldn't see returns in 35 years. So like, yeah, Earth absolutely, if they're like, hey, we got to bring this to them, they'd be like, well, you fucking do it all by yourself.
We're not bothering. It's not worth it to us. Yeah.
And I don't think Mars can. That's the thing. I don't think Mars is in a position where they can do this without Earth. Earth is definitely not in a position to do it without Mars.
Mm-hmm.
But Dev somehow is going to steal it. And yeah, I bet it's like, I bet it's some kind of
some things that are true here. Like he's trying to buy us off. Yeah, that's exactly what he's doing. But he's also 100% correct that their actual goal is unattainable. So
yeah,
a buyout is the only possible option here. We know as show watchers, they don't know that, right? Like this offer of first 100 people to cross the line. This is a tempting offer, but it's also, like you said, a handshake deal. And they don't know that they can't actually get the thing that they want if they just stay together here.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we do. So Dev comes off looking like the guy who is the most pragmatic negotiator in the room, right? He understands all the stakes. He understands all the positions, and he is giving them the best possible deal, which is why I think like he doesn't actually come off looking that bad in this episode, even though he's busting up a union, because we know they can't get the thing they want.
My question is, why is he going about it this way? Why doesn't he? Because he can't let Earth know that he's stealing the asteroid.
Yeah. And speed. He needs them back now.
Whew. Man, it's rough. It's rough because it's just morally kind of off the you know, we're talking about like, yeah.
Big picture, the morality here is kind of gross, but like in the moment, it's the best offer possible, right? I mean,
yeah.
Except for the people who don't cross the line, which is...
It was weird to give Ed the line of you're killing Mars, because Ed doesn't really care. Ed doesn't like.
Yeah, like, I agree. That's
in the
weird.
Abstract sense of Mars as a thing, like maybe he does want it to be something bigger. But I don't know. I've just like there's some real passion there. I wish I'd get that line to like Sam or one of her compatriots, because it's just like giving it to the guy that's in it for the wrong reasons felt weird to me.
Yeah, and I think the story they've told the least, if that's where they're going with it, is Ed genuinely caring about what happens with Mars.
Right.
He's more about wanting to just die up here in space because he's an old space guy, doesn't have anything that he cares for at home.
Uh-huh.
And sticking it to Danny.
Yeah, and I also another follow-on thought is I thought that what Dev was offering was just the same kind of stuff that Danny was offering, just a little bit better. Like when I hear someone saying, "We're going to increase your pension contributions," something that happens in the future, and I've lived through multiple attempts of people's pensions being just completely raided by corporate. So what the hell does that even mean? Better health plan. Again, stuff that's going to happen in the future might impact your family in the future, but it's not putting the money. And shares of Helios stock. That's the only concrete offer. But like, unless you know how much, and you know,
you get one share. Great, wonderful.
Yeah, like what does that actually mean? And the fact that people are crossing this line with it's a handshake deal with Dev, and like you said, immunity to prosecution. That's actually something. But what power does he have to grant that? America, like these are federal charges. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how he could ever offer that without being laughed out of the room, but maybe I missed a line about him, you know, having the legal authority here. This is a plan from NASA and us, or from the U.S. government, the president and us.
Mm-hmm. I don't think but so. Cause like that's everything. Cause Dev blew off Danny the whole time, which makes sense now. Cause he's going to betray her, but
yeah,
I don't think this is a plan from Washington. I think this is something that Dev's coming up on his own.
Yeah, this will be super interesting. See how Danny reacts to it all. So Margot arrives outside the MCSE to a mob of reporters, and Eli welcomes her and walks her inside. We get a conspicuous shot of the American flag here from above. She's back on American soil. Is Margaret going to try to redefect? Can she say, Eli, they're keeping me prisoner. I didn't mean anything I said in that speech. Can you get me out?
I don't think you can rule it out, but that would be such a provocation to Moscow at this point. Like, mm-hmm. you're promising mm-hmm. diplomatic immunity, and they get over there, and then you just, you know, you let them defect.
Yeah.
But also, I could see something, you know, the KGB black bag and her Russian Aleda and her wanting to do that.
And how would it look in the public's eye if Margaret comes out and makes the speech? Like, yeah, dude. None of what I said there, that was all coerced at gunpoint, you know?
I mean, at this point, that she'd be a triple agent. I don't see how anyone could possibly, you know, I hope they're telling the story of Margot making her bed. Like, that's the thing.
I think so.
Like, season one Margot could have avoided season four Margot's fate. But, mm-hmm. like, every single time she's had the chance to do that, she has stepped more. She has crawled further into that bed and pulled the covers up further and closer to her chin. So I hope they're telling the story of her making a bed. It's a sad. It's tragic. Like, I can even kind of mm-hmm. rationalize the decision she's made as she went. But she made a lot of bad calls. And I think the show's done a good job of showing that she got in for human reasons, but she also was a little too proud and a little too arrogant and thought that the rules didn't apply to her and that she was smart enough. Her and Sergei were smart enough to get one over on their, and she was wrong. She bet fucking wrong, and she's paying the price. If she mm-hmm. gets out of that, I don't know how that would sit with me.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to tell that story. I think it's going to be more the drama that Aleda has to confront
yeah.
about her mentor being, you know, still generally on the side of the thing that they both love, which is space, but also being the terrible person.
And there's something delicious about her mentor, Von Braun. You know, his penalty was having mm-hmm. to live in a country that despised him and saw him as, you know, after the things got out, saw him as a turncoat, a traitor, a Nazi in, you know, an all but name. And that's something he had to live with, and it was tough for him. It's kind of interesting to see Margot in the exact same position where she's kind of captured as a spoil of war and now has to live amongst people who don't really take her seriously and don't respect her and don't trust her.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully Aleda will see all that shit and choose smarter choices.
Yeah, we'll see. So far, so good. The final scene here, Ed takes out his frustration on his exercise bike in his quarters when Dev stops by and asks Ed to help him steal the Goldilocks asteroid from Mars. And then, boom, the needle drop.
Waiting for that hip-hop needle drop. And we fucking got it now. It was a good one.
It got hype at the end of this episode, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I was kind of like, you know, arms crossed, eyes narrowed at a lot of this episode, but I gotta say, I do think they could pull out all the stops and do a rip-roaring asteroid theft, high stakes, you know, we the audience know all the information, everybody else trying to figure it out, like classic, you know, early season one, season two For All Mankind. Is Ron Moore make that big a difference? Because I know he kind of like was checking out in season two and was out by, you know, season three. But it does seem to me that For All Men, that's the thing. I want to get reinvested, but I just don't know if these people have it to pull that off. And I don't know if it's the Ron Moore of it or, you know, I know we talked with our buddy Pete and he's kind of poo-pooed that. And that, you know, Ron maybe was the idea guy, wrote a couple season one scripts, but it's always been the showrunner. But I don't know. Or maybe it's just as they get closer to present day, the what ifs and the butterfly wings, wing flaps get so large and outsized that it's hard to make something as believable and as solid as I don't know. But I want to get excited about this asteroid heist. I'm just this whole season has made me very nervous about if that's going to feel satisfying.
I recently rewatched Deep Space Nine, and that show, you know, the Ron Moore is a big part of that show.
Sure, yeah.
And I remember the Dominion War part of that show being pretty expertly run from a political standpoint.
Uh-huh.
And especially when there were, you know, lines crossed throughout that whole run. I did think that it had just a firm foundation that it stood on. So maybe, I don't know his exact involvement in the show. Maybe he hasn't been there for 3 seasons, but like, I look at everything that happened on DS9 and I say, well, if Ron Moore was a part of that, and a big part of why that was so successful, maybe he was also a big part of why this felt like it came together so perfectly, because he did sweat those details. And, you know, even if he wasn't writing the scripts, personally, he could still be there saying, no, this doesn't quite ring true. Let's go with this angle. This person would be concerned about this. These government forces would be working in this way. And really, he was the guy that tied the plan together. But I don't know that for a fact. I can just go on what I've seen of this show and what I've seen of Ron Moore's history. And then you can also like point to Battlestar Galactica and say, yeah, it didn't always work out there, but a lot of the time it worked out. Mm-hmm. You know, people just didn't like the ending of that show. And that's fine. But I don't know. I immensely enjoyed both of those series. And I think Ron Moore being a big part of that and a big part of this is what made it feel so grounded.
Yeah, here's my big worry for the asteroid plot. My big worry for the asteroid plot is it's going to be Dev and, you know, Ed and Dev's going to be in a room and they're like, all right, Ed, we're going to steal this asteroid. How are we going to do it? And Dev's going to steeple his fingers like, the way I see it, and it's going to fade to another scene. And then we're going to see Helios dock the asteroid and they're going to do a bunch of thrusting and stuff. And we're not going to know like what the actual plan is, and they're going to tell the heist by talking around the heist. Everyone sees the heist happening and NASA but it's like we as the audience don't understand, so we can't appreciate it, because I think that's a very hard thing to write from a scientifically accurate, and from everything I've seen the last 2 seasons, I think they're going to, rather than do all that and calculate in the delta V, they're just going to, it's going to be a secret plan that we see unfolding through NASA's reaction to it. And it's just going to feel very writerly, and it's not going to feel crunchy and hard. And thus the investment that we've had in previous seasons isn't going to occur. And that's my fear. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But that's what I'm really afraid of.
The thing that has always been attractive about this show to me is that crunchiness mixed with the drama, the human drama, right? Like, they've been able to nail both of those aspects, and I feel like they've kind of lost a bit of the crunchiness in this season.
Yeah, like, we know the plan. We can see when things go wrong. We can participate with the astronauts and NASA when they're trying to fix things and make it go right.
Mm-hmm.
And like from the original asteroid capture mission, like why are they doing it this way? Why are they doing it this way? Why are they like, they had no answers. Like, shit, like, you know, like when should they jettison it the first time they get a tremor? Like, is it possible to recover from this? Like, we don't know enough. It's just things that are happening, and people that do know are telling us things. But like, I don't. You got to have a lot of trust in the product to enjoy a story like that. And I don't know. Like I said, I'm just worried. I said that a million times. Try saying it too much.
Well, we'll see how many cables are involved, because I bet there's going to be a lot of cables.
Swipping in every direction.
Mm-hmm. Watch out for them. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah, I don't know.
I do think there's going to be a serious like jurisdictional battle that comes up if devs try to steal this asteroid. Like, who owns the colony on Mars, and who has not just the authority to back that up, but the might to back it up, right? Because Dev is effectively declaring Mars independent is what's going to happen if he steals this asteroid. And he's got a lot of people from a lot of different countries. Oh, at best, he could be declaring war.
At worst, they're a rogue state. Like, not even like at war, like a rogue state. Like, they're like, it's a criminal, illegitimate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he's got a lot of people from a lot of different factions up here. And granted, he has the numbers, but he also doesn't have full capacity on food to feed everyone here. You got to remember, they're 3/4 sustainable at this point. So who's going to starve? Or who's going, I guess, are they got to prioritize getting that at 100% because they have to now.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of considerations. And how does Earth respond if Mars declares independence?
Well,
they don't have necessarily the ability to respond. beyond okay, you're not getting any of our support anymore.
Yeah, and if you look at the what our track record has been when it comes to like rejecting you know, barbarism in favor of curbing our greed, it's not been great. We almost always choose barbarism over curbing the greed.
You're gonna fire nukes at Happy Valley? I mean, what's the plan here?
You could, or you could just say, you know what? Who are you going to sell that iridium to?
That's what I was wondering,
too.
We're
going to let you starve, and then we're going to take it all anyway.
We're going to privatize. We're going to, publicize your company. Like, we're going to take Helios from you.
They could just send 1,000 Marines there with rifles and take... I mean, there's, like, so... Earth is definitely, like... If they captured the only power they've got is letting... I think the only power Mars has got is letting Asteroid go. If once they capture it and do whatever with it, like, it's then a prize to be taken. And, like, Mars is not in a position to develop that prize and exploit it. And Earth is. And Earth has 7-8 billion people. And factories and a fucking moon base and everything else. Like, yeah, I think it's stupid. Yeah, like, Earth will just win that fight.
Yeah, it's hard to get people to Mars. It's such a fragile thing, right? Traveling in space. It's not like you can roll tanks there. You're rolling eggs. You're like the shells protecting these people are so brittle. If Mars could fire a single projectile at them, it might... like a tiny one, right? It would stop them from actually landing. So,
but you can barely feed your people. You're gonna put your economy on a wartime footing with like 1,000 people. And
this is what's so fascinating, right? Like, how
is
this going to play out?
That stuff is interesting, and the more detail they got into it, the like almost the better. But
agreed, yeah. And yeah. Then, and what about the people who are already there, right? Who want no part of Dev's independence or war or future for Mars, whatever it is, like. Does Kelly want to be trapped here? I know it's better for Alex to be here, but does she want to be trapped here? Does Miles want to be trapped here because the Earth won't accept anybody from Helios at this point? And if you go back, you're going to be prosecuted. He's got a family back there that he was just earning his good graces of again. So, like,
well, and if we're talking about the realism
so
of
many
it,
things.
One of the really amazing things they did at the world building on the Expanse is they had the conceit of the Epstein Drive, which is this quantum leap in propulsion technology that a Martian invented, and they had it wasn't a resource that Earth could take. It was intellectual property that instantly made the Martian fleet be able to outcompete Earth on a technological, and it like put Earth on its back heels. I hope they're not thinking the iridium asteroid would be that for Mars, because that's just something Earth could take by force, and it doesn't immediately help. It's like they can't use that iridium asteroid to make impenetrable shields or like high powered energy weapons or, you know, necessarily faster fusion drives, and at least not right away. And that's like I said, the brilliant and probably most science fiction-y thing of the Expanse, the Epstein drive, the thing that makes, you know, the whole world possible. It's like this asteroid's not that, and I hope they don't try to pretend it is, because
I wonder if they're going to say, well, Dev knows he's on the clock now. Because they will try and take this, but Earth needs to spin up a space program, because it seems like Helios is the Earth's space program at this point. So, like, I mean, I know they have some operations on the moon, but we don't know the extent of those anymore. And I don't know who's controlling that, right? Does Helios have the monopoly on transport to the moon as well?
Yeah, but like my thought is like if Mars is truly a rogue state and like all the M7 countries are like on board with that, and it seems like they would be, the U.S. could just take everything Helios has got. The only thing they wouldn't be able to take is the stuff that's on Mars.
Well, take it, but they need to ramp up a program, right? It's expensive. They're going to have to come up with a space program themselves, and they're going to need time to implement it. They can't just – they don't have the equipment. Helios is the space program, so they have to
build
have
the equipment to take it, but they have the equipment to destroy Mars, and then the thing that they want is in orbit around Mars, so they could just, you know, like you said, nuke Happy Valley.
On nuking the first Martian colony is pretty bad.
That's true.
Pretty bad.
This is true.
Optics are not good on that. So I'm trying to explore all the angles, right? Like, what?
Because
how is this going to shake out? It's kind of amazing.
that the whole barbarism greed thing breaks down is when there's a lot of eyeballs and a lot of like a appreciable part of their world being shocked at their sensibilities at what at the barbarism that's happening.
You can only push that so far. Yeah.
Yeah. That's when the colonial shit kind of breaks down. So I would love to see them explore all that. I think this is an audacious thing they're trying to do. And I'll leave it at that.
Agreed. Hope it works out. That's the end of the episode.
All right. Well, here's the part where we normally read feedback, but as I explained in the previous episode, we're going on the dark side of the moon. We are we're recording this from the past. Jim and I, if everything's going right, are enjoying Christmas break with our families. We recorded these in advance. We will not catch up to feedback until I believe episode 9. So please continue to send it fam@baldmove.com. Your thoughts, your theories, what you think of. It feels very cowardly to come out and say to square up against a show and then take off and avoid criticism and feedback for 2 weeks. But them's the breaks. fam@baldmove.com. If you got your thoughts, your opinions, your feelings, your theories, send those in. If you want to find out what else we're up to, we got a bunch of stuff. We had a ton of Christmas content. Lots of movies we just reviewed. We're doing Fargo and For All Mankind. The best way to keep up with everything we're doing is @BaldMove on all social media, except for TikTok. We're @BaldestMove there. And finally, if you would like to help support doing what we're doing here at Bald Move and get some extra bonus audio, video content, ad-free feeds, etc., support.baldmove.com is how you accomplish those things. That's going to be it for us here at Bald Move. Until next week. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Bye, Bob.